This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled weekend. Do you have plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an entertaining evening with a renowned trumpeter, conversation with a two-time Tony Award-winning actress and singer, or a good read exploring the strange story of integration during this Black History Month. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. I'm your host, Diane Mack. Acclaimed trumpeter, composer, and poet Hannibal Lokombe returns to the Contemporary Arts Center this weekend with two performances. And the CAC also celebrates his prior residencies with a new exhibit. And their voices cry freedom again. A journey through Lokombe's works inspired by the New Orleans community. He dropped by our studios to talk about his latest projects.
Hey.
It's good to see you back in New Orleans. And back at the Contemporary Arts Center, where you started with not one but two residencies.
Yeah, back home. Yeah.
What are your thoughts being back?
You know, after I do a concert here, I'd ride my bike. I loved riding my bike. It's the next best thing to walking in New Orleans. And so when I'd ride my bike after a concert, it never failed. Someone would say, hey, Hannibal, come on, how you doing? I'd go to their house. We'd eat crawfish. I didn't know them from Adam. Sit down at a table, have food, chicken, kids. It was as though we knew each other. And I guess, in essence, we did. But that's how I was treated here. I was treated like I never met a stranger.
The city loves you.
Oh, man.
Now, the CAC is honoring your work as a musician, composer, poet with a retrospective exhibit, and their voices cry freedom again. First of all, this is a retrospective exhibit about what you've done since 1999, I believe, your first residency at the CAC. When we come to the CAC, what are we going to see in this exhibit?
See long scrolls of manuscript papers that I always write on when I compose. You see letters from John Scott, sculptures from Martin Payton, poetry books, images of Ms. Rosa Parks, who I wrote a piece for when I was here. I must have written five major works for orchestra during my residency here. Probably 10 or 12 pieces for a choir. I wrote a string quartet. It was unbelievable, the impact that this city has on my psyche. It's amazing. And when I was writing the piece for the Detroit Symphony called Dear Mrs. Parks, when I left, the mayor gave me a proclamation to give to Mrs. Parks. Someone took a photograph of me giving it to her when I went to visit her in her apartment. She made dinner for me. And so there's this picture. We're standing by the Freedom Medal, and I'm giving her this proclamation from Mayor C. Ray Nagin on behalf of the people of New Orleans. When I said New Orleans, she smiled. It's so much, and it's growing. It's still growing.
At this point, you're turning your sights to America's prisons.
Yes, for the past 3 years I've been doing that. And every part of my contract in every city I go to requires that I go to the prisons, that I go to the jails. Because the brothers and sisters in the prisons, they are the measure of the health of our communities. They are the litmus test as to what's going to go on in our community. Because when they get out, they're either going to make our babies follow them, follow evil or destruction, or they can become the heroes to these young brothers and sisters. I always tell the brothers in the prison, you are the key to the health of the community and to the health of this nation, because you know what it's like to suffer. You just have to redirect your power. You have to reroute that. It's nothing powerful and admirable about being a gangster. Dr. King wasn't a gangster. Mega Evers wasn't a gangster. Tootie Montana wasn't a gangster. You have the ability to change the mental concept and perception of the people in our communities across the nation.
You continue to use your art, your music, to heal and uplift communities. What will you perform on Friday and Saturday?
On March 1st and 2nd at the Contemporary Arts Center, I'm doing 14 works that I composed during my residency here. Friday, we're going to do 7 of the works, and Saturday, we're going to do the other 7. And with us, we have singing the great Philip Manuel, Valerie Francis, and the Music Liberation Orchestra. That's the name of the organization I founded that I work in the prisons with. Anthony Wanzi on piano, David Paupus on bass, myself on trumpet. We also have a choir from Dillard University and Nichols State University Choir. The music certainly is spiritually based, and jazz and blues. For certain, they'll hear the best I have to give, that's for sure.
You're giving back the love the city has given to you over the years.
Hallelujah, amen. Pass the plate. And the chicken, too.
Now, you were born Marvin Peterson.
Yes, ma'am.
In Smithville, Texas.
Smithville, Texas.
A few moons ago.
1948.
How did you adopt the name Hannibal Lacombe?
Well, I was given the name Hannibal by Yoruban priest after he heard me play for 7 nights at the Carnet Club in Brooklyn, New York. And my great-grandmother, a forced member of the Trail of Tears, she's my spirit guide. And she came to me one night and said, I'm going to give you the name Lacombe. It means the spirit that lives in the wind. And to have this name, you must earn it. So I went into the woods and I fasted for about a week. And I burned a fire, and the ashes from the fire I got and put around my neck in memory of our people that were lost in the Middle Passage. She's telling me what to do. And so when I did that, I was allowed to use the name in public, Lacombe, Hannibal Lacombe. I was given those names.
Hannibal, it's always nice to see you.
I'm sorry I ramble on, but, you know, New Orleans does that to me.
Hannibal Lacombe performs in concert at the CAC 900 Camp Street, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. The CAC will host 2 special exhibition preview receptions on each night, beginning at 5:30. We round out Black History Month with a look at the strange story of integration in America. WWNO's Fred Kasten, who produces The Sound of Books, talks with New York Times bestselling author Tanner Colby about his critically acclaimed new work, Some of My Best Friends Are Black.
It's not really a book about race so much as it is a book about people and how they've dealt with the issue of race and integration. So it's told very much from the ground level of telling people's individual stories.
And telling people's individual stories is something Tanner Colby does very well in Some of My Best Friends Are Black, as he did in his first 2 books, biographies of, respectively, John Belushi and Chris Farley.
What led me out of the dead fat comedian business into wanting to do a book about race, because I realized I didn't know any black people, I didn't know anything about race, and we were living in a world with a black president.
Ruminations that began for Tanner Colby in the spring and summer of 2008, when he was casting around for a new book topic, while becoming first intrigued by, and then a supporter of, Barack Obama's presidential candidacy.
Of course, every inch of the campaign was being dissected, you know, 6 ways to Sunday, 24 hours after it happened, so there wasn't a whole lot to write about the campaign itself that wasn't already being said 30 different times, but that's when I sort of had this personal revelation of, you know, I'm voting for Barack Obama, I don't really know any black people, so that's that's odd, and nobody's really talking about, everybody's talking about Obama and what's going on the national stage, but there's a more personal, you know, ground level story that, that most people are living that isn't really being told, and I thought that was a gap that, that maybe I could fill.
Tanner Colby spent his childhood in Lafayette, Louisiana, went to high school in Vestavia Hills, a white flight suburb of Birmingham, and worked in the advertising business in New York City before his writing career took off. He makes good use of his personal history to season the interesting and informative individual stories he uncovers of black and white Americans' experiences in four common categories of national life: school, church, workplace, and neighborhood.
I didn't want to write about like integration in the military or, you know, the music business, both of which have been, you know, great forces for integration in America, because most people aren't rock and roll superstars, and, you know, most people aren't in the military. So I wanted to write about what I call the public square, which is places where we all have an experience. You may not have grown up in the Catholic Church in southern Louisiana, which is very unique. You may not have gone to a white flight suburb school in Birmingham, Alabama, where the official school flag was Confederate flag, which is also a very unique experience. But most people go to church. Everyone's been to school. So, you know, anyone can relate on some level to those things and take the stories of the people in the book and use those to reflect on your own life. What's been funny about how the book's been received is that a lot of the reviews have called it bleak and depressing and a sign of, you know, how we've ruined everything about race in America. And other reviews have said it, called it incredibly hopeful. You know, it's gotten both reactions. And I tend to default towards the latter, because when you read about these massive structural obstacles that stand in the way of integration, yeah, it's pretty bleak when you look at it like that. But it's optimistic in the sense that you as an individual, whether you're black or white, can kind of just change things tomorrow, or start to change things tomorrow if you want to. The great quote that I got from this black guy at this church in Louisiana, that why blacks didn't choose to integrate in the 1970s, he said, all the blacks wanted was respect, and we didn't get it. Black people tried to enter open society, and they were disrespected, and people aren't going to stay where they're not respected. So they said, all right, well, we're not going to stay. We're going to go back to our own churches and our own neighborhoods, and, you know, we survived there just fine for 100 years, and we'll do it again. And so the lack of respect for each other really poisoned the well of what happened. To me, that's what I guess, if you had to distill it all down to the nut of it, is that, you know, all integration is mutual respect. And you have to educate yourself and be open to understanding the other person in order to respect them, and they have to do the same for you. So it's really very much a two-way street, but, you know, it's entirely within our grasp.
Tanner Colby, author of the deeply researched, beautifully written, and highly recommended new book, Some of My Best Friends Are Black: The Strange Story of Integration in America. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
Listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. My next guest is known to young audiences as a star of the ABC Family TV series, Bunheads. She's Sutton Foster, two-time Tony Award winner for roles in Thoroughly Modern Millie and Anything Goes. She is part of Seth Rudesky's Broadway concert series of leading ladies at NOCA. We caught up with Sutton by phone. Welcome to New Orleans.
Thank you. I'm so excited to come back. I think the first time I came to New Orleans, I was like 18, doing the Will Rogers Follies. I've actually played there, I think, three times. But it's been a long time since I've been back, so I'm really excited.
I think you'll be excited to see some of the changes in the city, too.
Oh, I can imagine.
So audiences know you for your Tony Award-winning performances in Thoroughly Modern Millie and more recently, Anything Goes. Can you talk about your breakthrough performance in Thoroughly Modern Millie and how you felt when you were awarded the Tony Award for that performance?
Millie was, I thought, 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, my gosh. And it was really, you know, my entire career changed overnight because I was originally cast as the understudy for the production. When we were out of town, we were doing a pre-Broadway tryout in La Jolla, California. And I was originally cast as the understudy. And then about a week before we started performances, the lead actress got sick and I stepped in for her. Basically, they asked me to take over the part. And I remember my first reaction being like complete terror. And, you know, I remember thinking, they're making a mistake. I'm not ready. And somehow they took a big leap and cast me. And then they asked me to play the part when it moved to Broadway. That whole experience was in many ways a bit of a blur because it was so like everything I had ever dreamed of. And then it was actually happening. And now I have perspective on it, but while it was happening, it was just like a big old blurry blob. And winning the Tony was just sort of icing on the cake, an all-around, you know, really incredible experience and career-changing.
Wow. What was it that put you over the top?
There were incredible performances that year. And I think the combination of me being new to the city, the understudy, taking over the lead, the fact that the role I was playing was about a girl that just arriving in New York City. And so there was just all these things that were in sync at the same time. And I think it was a combination of all those things.
And you came back for an encore with Anything Goes.
Yeah, I did 6 Broadway shows in a row. Millie sort of being the beginning of that run and then Anything Goes being the end of it. And that was that was 2011. I played Rena Sweeney and that was like a dream role of mine ever since I was little. And to get to sing all those Cole Porter songs. And that was a very magical time, that whole experience.
And what was your favorite song?
Probably Blow Gabriel Blow.
When I blow my horn, I'll blow Gabriel Blow. Go on, blow Gabriel Blow.
When I was growing up, I'm a huge Patti LuPone fan. And Patti had played Reno Sweeney, and I just remember hearing her sing Gabriel. And I think it's just like following in the footsteps of all those great women who played this part before, Ethel Merman, Patti LuPone, and the next thing you know, I'm like standing there doing it.
Now you're one of those leading ladies in this concert series with Seth Rudetsky.
I know, it's so crazy. I still feel like the 15-year-old kid, you know, so I can't believe I'm in the same company as some of these people. It's doesn't compute in my brain.
You are also branching out to younger audiences these days with a leading role in the ABC Family TV series Bunheads. Tell us about your role and how you're connecting with today's youth.
Bunheads has been awesome. I was attracted to the show because of the creator, the writer is Amy Sherman-Palladino, who wrote Gilmore Girls, which is like one of my favorite shows of all time. The show is about dance and about young people and about teaching. And it's just things that I just feel very passionate about. I love working with young performers and being able to sort of share like my experiences with them. And really, if anything, they inspire me and make me a better performer. So it's just been wonderful. And I'm thrilled that young audiences are responding to Bunheads and seem to like the show.
So what can we look forward to in your New Orleans show?
Well, I'm really excited to work with Seth because he's the thing I love about him the most is that he's completely unpredictable and spontaneous. And so we have basically like a grab bag full of songs of things sort of walking through a lot of my career and memories that him and I share, actually. And I have a feeling that it's going to be a very spontaneous, fun show. So I at this point, I have no idea what to expect. I just know that we have about 20 songs basically in a hat, and we might just pull them out and see what happens. But it should be fun. I think it's going to be a nice walk down memory lane.
Well, Sutton, this has been wonderful. Thanks so much for talking with me this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
two-time Tony Award winner Sutton Foster will entertain audiences with songs and conversation at Noka's Lupin Hall, 2800 Charter Street, Saturday, March 2nd, 9:30 p.m. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Southern Rep continues its New Plays New Orleans mission with 6x6 New Play Slam. This month's theme is Secrets. The 6x6 Play Slam, now in its third year, is a group of local playwrights who write 10-minute plays, which are presented six times a year by Southern Rep Theater. 6x6 New Play Slam will take place Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. at Mid-City Theater, 3540 Toulouse Street. And the All-Star Jam at Loyola University, February 28th, will bring together some of New Orleans' most innovative jazz artists in celebration of the historic jam session tradition. The event takes place at 7:30 p.m. in Satchmo's in the Dana Student Center at Loyola University, featuring guitarist Steve Masakowski, drummer Johnny Vodagovich, bassist Roland Guerin, pianist Mike Esnault, and saxophonist Tony DeGrotti. More information online at montage.loyno.edu. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our show is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.